From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. When the whole world seems turned upside down, we sort through it together. Tyler Nixon on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome to the Tyler Nixon Show for March 4th, 2024, here on today's News Talk. We have a great guest lined up for you, a personal confidant for many years of Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is really taking American politics by storm, which is a novel development considering that he has sat out the American political scene really his entire life. I mean, he's one of the few Kennedys who's not actually gotten into the thick of politics. He's gotten involved, obviously, in public service in the truest sense. He has been an environmental attorney and has really fought a crusade against also vaccination injuries and questionable science. And for this has taken serious beatings from the medical establishment, from the government medical industrial establishment, the Lord Fauci set, the overseers who would have us lining up for jabs and boosters and booster jabs and jab boosters, till we're basically not even human anymore. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has stood against this, and I think very much in the tradition of his father and his uncle, who were obviously both assassinated. And I think it really, for someone who has spent his life, as he says, trying to stay out of electoral politics, really never gearing himself up to run for president, for him to enter the race, you have to think that the stakes are extremely high right now for not only for the United States, but for the world. And that his entrance brings a totally different energy, and which I really am a fan. Frankly, I've become a fan, even as a Republican named Nixon, of the Kennedys, or of the original Kennedys, the Kennedys of today, since basically Ted Kennedy onward, other than Bobby Jr., I have no use for. And this is reflected in how they have gone after him in vicious ways, in my opinion, for family members, that old man Joe and Honey Fitz, and frankly, Jack and Bobby would have been thought appalling, because they were nothing if not loyal to their family and to that clan. And but he is, in my opinion, one of the a super intellect, a super fine in every way, individual, a gentleman, a true public servant, a humble person. He's a devout man. I was really struck by the documentary that came out, which my guest actually had aired live for the first time on her Twitter feed. And she can tell us the name, it escapes me immediately, but it was, I think Dick Russell was involved in it, but it talked about Bobby's faith, and also he feels very connected to St. Francis, of course, St. Francis of Assisi, who was, very much the patron saint of those who are impoverished and the most vulnerable in our society and in the world. And I didn't realize this because, I mean, many times you get environmentalists, they're very, let's just say it's, Mother Gaia and that kind of thing. They're not necessarily connected to a Christian version of faith, which I don't see that there's nothing wrong with that. I don't decry that or denigrate it, but at the same time, it was refreshing to see that his father's very deep and devout Catholicism definitely stuck with him. And I'm sure his mother, especially as well, she was very similar. They were both very devout people, very dissimilar to, frankly, not that Jack and Jackie were not religious people or didn't have faith, but they certainly were not the very strict Catholics, I think you could say, that Bobby and Ethel Kennedy were. So without further ado, I think I've just kind of given a little intro. I want to bring in Laurie Spencer of Maverick News, and also just a longtime independent journalist and truth teller and friend of mine and a great lady. Laurie, welcome to the show.
Hi, it's me and my cat. And meet Jack, everybody. Guess who I named him after?
Jack Palance.
Jack Kennedy, of course. I have a family of cats, all black cats, all related, and they're all named after the Kennedys, the Kennedy cats. So we've got Jack and his mother, Jackie, and sister, Caroline.
there's more?
No, I think that's, I had to get everybody fixed.
Okay.
So we wouldn't have any cat incest going on. You know how
it
is.
That wouldn't be, that would not be good.
I have a boy and he's going to hump anything that moves.
Oh my gosh. So. Well, starting out on such a high and dignified note for the Tyler Nixon Show. So now tell me just real quick. I mentioned the documentary. What is it called? I'm sorry, the name escapes me, but it was a very compelling just a bio. And I mean, you can't help but not like this man and have respect for him as an American, as a crusader for justice. He would be a perfect president. We can get into that. I want you to tell me a little bit about just your background with your confidant, being confidant of Bobby's over the years, and of course this documentary, and what you think of his campaign.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed the documentary. Thanks for watching it. It's called The Real RFK Jr., and it's a Jeff Hayes film. Jeff Hayes is the guy who made the film The Real Anthony Fauci last year, based on Bobby Kennedy's book, The Real Anthony Fauci. And so Jeff also just made this new film, which is based on the book by Dick Russell. And I don't know if you've read Dick's book, but it's terrific, which is also called The Real RFK Jr. It's an authorized biography. And what I loved most about this new film is that Bobby Kennedy opened his personal family archives of Kennedy home movies and photographs that the public has never seen. It's like he opened up his photo albums and just said, here, use what you want. So there's just a treasure trove of history in the film, especially at the beginning, of course, where he's talking about his father, talking about President Kennedy and the Kennedy family growing up as a Kennedy. And I also loved the brutal honesty of the film. I find it striking, of course, knowing Bobby, I know that he's just like that. He's an upfront, open book kind of person in his private life as well. But the film addresses his drug addiction that he struggled with as a teenager and throughout his 20s, addresses, the family tragedies, just so honest. And I've never seen any presidential candidate in a lifetime of politics make such an honest, authorized film about themselves.
I have to say, I mean, it's almost as though he doesn't have an ego, or it doesn't have an ego in the sense, the pejorative sense, meaning he doesn't have a prideful, self-importance. I mean, none of that. His humility is striking. I mean, it really is. It's not just for a political candidate, for anybody. I mean, any person, any man, particularly of his accomplishment. And you mentioned the old films. I thought it was really interesting to hear him before he had gotten his vocal affliction, and hear him speak in his natural voice, which I think it was, there was a film from maybe, I want to say it was about 25 years ago, or maybe would that have been right?
Yeah.
Just based on how he looked, his age.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, he lost his voice when he was like 42 years old. Before that, he had a lovely, normal speaking voice.
A little more a tenor than his father, a little deeper, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, it is wild to see those clips of him before the vocal thing happened,
What's interesting though, I mean, I've heard people say, what's with his voice, kind of thing. It's like, mm-hmm. While you're a class act, I think personally it gives him a sense of gentility to him, I guess you could say, in the sense that his voice is soft, not by his own choice necessarily, or it's not, he could never be a bombast. He could never get up and, really, even like Jack Kennedy especially was able to do. Jack could really get, lay into that, he'd get that pitch. And like say a Donald Trump could do, or even Joe Biden once did. Of course, Joe Biden was more shrill, but it's just another aspect, a fascinating aspect, just a natural affliction though that gives him a gentility, or a lack of abrasiveness, a lack of hostility, or a sense of hostility. One of the things that struck me about his that he said in the movie or the documentary was I can't remember how he phrased it. He said that when somebody, something about when he stumbles or makes a mistake or somebody goes after him, he views it as, what's God trying to tell me? He said, that's God speaking to me through others, through the, you know, through these minute to minute life lessons. And I thought that was so very profound. I mean, even for, I mean, I've certainly heard profound thinkers, profound theologians, people who have had some really very in-depth and just compelling things to say about their relationship with God. But I mean, his was, there's a unique take that I've ever heard. And I mean, I studied, theological curricula at Georgetown. So, I mean, I've certainly been exposed to a lot, and that his was, I sound like a big fanboy, but I mean, the more I've listened to the Kennedys and the more I've seen our politics degenerate into this circus freak show that we have today in very many ways, or at least let's just say a lack of substance, there's a lack of integrity. And I mean, what happened to the substance? Even 30 years ago, I was watching, for example, Jack Kemp. I don't know if you remember.
I do remember Jack Kemp.
Who, sure. I thought was a really good man and very similar, and sort of, I think he modeled himself after the Kennedys, even at the big hair. And I was listening to him in the debate, and I think it was with Pat Schroeder, the old, Colorado Congresswoman.
Right,
of course. And I just thought, in 5 minutes, they've covered more substance and in a more intellectual and truly, lacking, let's just say, the personal spite and all the nonsense or the gossip, whatever you want to call it, just all the pablum that it's become today. In 5 minutes, they covered more than I'd probably seen in 6 months in the current conversation, the current dialogue and discourse in American politics. So in the Kennedys, I mean, they were even on a higher level. You watch like the Nixon-Kennedy debates. I mean, this is like, these guys knew these issues inside out. You know, why, what do you think, I mean, is it the media or is it just the race to the bottom? What has caused our politics to fall so far? And can a Bobby Jr., who is still on that high level, can he break through?
Well, like you said a minute ago, the vocal problem that he has is a significant obstacle. You know, we've never had a presidential candidate or a president who had a vocal disability, right? We had Franklin Roosevelt with a physical disability where the guy was literally on crutches or couldn't walk. But American voters were willing to accept his disability. And frankly, they were kept in the dark about a lot of it.
True.
Roosevelt was never photographed, very rarely photographed, and the press wouldn't publish pictures of him in his wheelchair. So, and Jack Kennedy, of course, was a lot more sick than the public knew, right? Had we known how sick Jack Kennedy was, he probably would not have been elected president.
Well, you know, only someone with Jack Kennedy's sort of charmed life could have a disease, Addison's, which I think is pretty much confirmed nowadays. Mm-hmm. Where one of the effects is to give you like what looks like a healthy glow from a tan. You know, that's like literally a symptom of Addison's disease that shows how sick you are in your dream.
And also,
it made him look like a movie star. I mean,
yeah. And also, he was on a high dose of steroids.
Right, right.
And just to maintain his normal immune function, he had to take these steroids. And so that also can give you the moon face. If you look at the earlier pictures of Jack Kennedy, he looks really gaunt and skinny, like a walking skeleton.
And he was still
filled out, and that's from the steroids, actually.
Indeed. He was still a very, you know, slim guy, even he's in that, you know, say into the late 50s, early 60s in his presidency. But because his face was so full, it gave him more of a robust appearance, which, again, same thing. I mean, it's just, it's strange. I mean, how all that would come together and none of that, you know, he didn't seem to bother him. Of course, the outward appearance didn't, his internal pain, the suffering this man went through, if people knew, I mean, how many times he almost died and the physical, I mean, his back pain. I mean, there's a picture of him planting a tree in Canada where you can see he leans over and literally this expression of just agony that he still masked, but he just like at the moment it tricked his back. It's from the side. You can see him.
I know the film you're talking about, and anybody who's ever had a back injury, when you watch that film, you know, the moment he does it, you can just see the face go, oh,
Yeah, you know? like right, the crow's feet are like, oh, you know.
Yeah, and you know, that was right on the eve of his visit to Vienna for the big summit with Nikita Khrushchev. And man, he had to get on a plane and fly for whatever, 9 hours over to Europe after he'd injured his back. Couldn't see a doctor, couldn't go to the hospital, you know, and had to get through the summit while he was in excruciating pain.
And, well, some would say that he was maybe a little over-medicated. In fact, I think Khrushchev thought, this guy's, you know, zonked out on something. And Jacobson, Dr. Feelgood, Max Jacobson, he was apparently on that trip.
He was. So,
you know, and I can't blame, I don't in no way fault President Kennedy for that. I mean, God, anybody who's had back pain knows that, believe me.
Through the day, you know, he once told his brother, Bob Kennedy, when Bobby expressed some concern over, you know, all these drugs that Dr.
Can you hold that thought, Laurie?
Yeah, I'll hold that thought.
we'll leave the viewers in suspense. We've got to take a quick commercial break here. You're watching The Tyler Nixon Show here on Today's News Talk. Stay with us.
TNT's Timothy Shea.
We need a calling in our public sphere. And I'm not calling for, you know, assassinations. I'm not calling for, no. What I'm saying is these people need to be exorcised from the public square. We need to stop giving them platforms. We need to stop amplifying their voices. I'm not saying censor them. I'm saying we need to stop listening to them. We need to stop voting for them. Claire McCaskill, newspapers need to stop fact-checking Joe Biden until they fact-check Donald Trump every day on the front page. Earth to Claire, where have you been in the last 8 years?
The Reckoning with Timothy Shea on Today's News Talk, TNT.
People might tell you that Lyme doesn't kill people, but we are losing people. People disappear from their lives.
One of the scariest things that I had to deal with was memory loss. Not just like I don't remember what I did last week, but like I forgot all the words to my own songs. I remember going to my primary care physician and he was like, you are 100% healthy. There's nothing wrong with you. And my response was, that's impossible. I'm dying.
I wasn't working. So I had all of these hospital bills. We had to move out of our home and move into my parents' basement.
I just wish I could have truly been present in those big moments. You know, when she took her first steps or, you know, her first day of preschool. Lyme is such a thief and it goes undetected because no one is looking for it.
For more information and prevention tips, go to projectlyme.org.
While serving in Afghanistan, I was hit by sniper fire. The fighting was so intense, the medevac chopper was barely able to land. In the hospital, I was given a 5% chance to live. It's a good thing math wasn't my best subject. Today, I visit classrooms and share my story. I talk to kids about dealing with life's struggles. I tell them, with a little help and a lot of work, that you can overcome any challenge.
DAV helps veterans like Adam get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
I know that some struggles are big and some are small, but they're all struggles, and you have to learn to get through them. With support from DAV, more veterans like me can live their best life. And as a new father, I have one more reason to keep on keeping on. My victory is being there for the next generation.
Adam Alexander, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Are you ready to help your family get prepared for the unexpected?
Here we go!
Ladybug and Cat Noir know how important it is to be ready. Because you never know when Hawk Moth is going to strike or a disaster will hit. And you don't need miraculous powers. Just put those planning skills you already have to good use. Make a plan that will help you and your family be ready when emergencies happen. Ready Kids can help. Get started at ready.gov/kids.
While serving in Afghanistan, I was hit by sniper fire. The fighting was so intense, the medevac chopper was barely able to land. In the hospital, I was given a 5% chance to live. It's a good thing math wasn't my best subject. Today, I visit classrooms and share my story. I talk to kids about dealing with life's struggles. I tell them, with a little help and a lot of work, that you can overcome any challenge.
DAV helps veterans like Adam get the benefits they've earned. They help more than a million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
I know that some struggles are big and some are small, but they're all struggles, and you have to learn to get through them. With support from DAV, more veterans like me can live their best life. And as a new father, I have one more reason to keep on keeping on. My victory is being there for the next generation.
Adam Alexander, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
The Irish government is proposing a law known as the Hate Speech Bill that threatens free speech. This law could have dire consequences for our democracy.
Next month, and then on to the next week.
This law will have uncertain effects on artistic and musical expression.
Please support us.
It could stifle the activity of public campaigning on political and civil issues, and also curtail speech relating to topics about religion, ethnicity, sex, and gender.
You could even be jailed for possessing documents, cartoons, or memes on your devices, even if you never read them or intended on sharing them. Mere possession could make you a criminal under this law. Help stop this law. Visit www.freespeechireland.ie/take action to bin the hate speech bill.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Come on, let the man talk.
We never censor our hosts.
Good. Now, talk.
Uncensored news.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Back with the Tyler Nixon Show live here on Today's News Talk. We are lighting the fuse for freedom. Every day after this show follows what I call the flagship of the TNT network, as well as sort of the large extended family of hosts, and that is State of the Nation, with Steve Hook and Brian Hesher McLean, 2 hours of action-packed interviews and everything under the sun, news analysis, opinions, and from two great patriots. It's not to be missed. And that is immediately following the Tyler Nixon Show. So back into my interview with Laurie Spence. Spencer. so Laurie, yeah, question: you were about to give us the other end of the what Jack told Bobby, and I think I know what you're going to say when it was discovered. I think Bobby, if I'm not mistaken, he had some of the drugs or like a vial of what was being given to Jack by this Dr. Feelgood, Max Jacobson, and he had it analyzed. Mm-hmm. And is this what you were alluding to?
Right. And of course, it revealed that President Kennedy was taking, you know, steroids, and also Jacobson, who'd been telling Kennedy that he was giving him an injection of vitamins, actually turned out to be amphetamine.
Yeah.
No wonder.
Vitamin so M, methamphetamine is what.
That's right.
No, it's for sure. And intravenously, I mean, I don't know if it was intravenous or intramuscular, but either way, anything that's injected is going to, you know, give you like a really heavy effect versus whatever else people would, I don't know, snort it, I guess. Apparently, Bobby confronted him, right? Because Bobby was a straight arrow. I mean, he was like, I'm sure, appalled and totally shocked because, I mean, you know, he didn't know what is being injected into my brother.
Right. Right. And so he goes to President Kennedy and asks him about it, or shows him the lab report and says, you're taking all this? And Jack just said to him, I don't care if it's horse pee, it works.
Yeah.
It works.
And he didn't say pee. He used the more.
Yeah, I don't know if I can say
real
that
term
on this show.
So. You know, we'll keep it clean. I think in some countries that's a curse word.
You get the general idea.
Yeah. I don't care if it's horse urine. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel good. Or it relieves my pain, I think is what he was essentially saying.
Exactly.
And, you know, I think it very much spoke to maybe less on, you know, Bobby's side, because I think Bobby didn't have those problems. And probably, I don't think that Bobby was, I think Bobby threw himself into life, but was not as fatalistic as Jack. I think Jack had, first of all, obviously almost died in the war and saw other people die. So I think he was much more fatalistic and sort of like, I'm going to live to the max. You know, I may only live a short life, but it's going to be a spectacular one. And it was.
And, you know, Jack Kennedy, he had been chronically ill all his life since he was a baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
He'd had every ailment known to mankind.
One of his legs was shorter than the other. I mean, people don't even know that. He had to wear like orthopedic or lift shoes on one side. He had, the list of his maladies and the things he had suffered since his childhood was like unbelievable. I mean, it was like a list of every, like you said, almost every malady or major other than, you know, actual fatal diseases. And even then he was, suffering with some that would have been eventually fatal to him. It's astonishing, like the grit that generation had. I mean, you got to think of like today, if someone had even one of the or two of those, I mean, they'd be like snowflake in the, you know, in the hospital bed and one of these, I don't know. I don't see a lot of that determination and grit and just sort of, there's a word for it, I guess, for people who would sort of the British stiff upper lip kind of thing. You know what I mean? You just take it and you never let on. You never let on and never make it anyone else's problem, which is a very selfless thing because, I mean, there's people who, you know, I'm sure you've been around sick people who, boy, are they a pain in the tuchus, you know?
Jack Kennedy wasn't going to file for disability and sit around. He could have. Any medical standard, he could have been approved for disability. He really shouldn't have been even approved for military service in World War II. And in fact, the first time, I believe it was the Navy rejected him. And he had to go through a friend of the family because he wanted to serve.
Yeah.
They didn't want to take him. He was just not well enough.
No, he was puny. He had all these, you know, his medical history was like, forget it, man. You're done.
They were going to put him in a real cushy desk job.
Yeah.
You know, and so he could sit out the war. I mean, he's the ambassador's son. He's rich. He's a Kennedy. He did not have to go into theater and do actual combat, but that's what he wanted to do. He's like, put me in, coach. Send me. So he literally had to pull strings to kind of get passed through a fake physical. They found a doctor who would write up a positive report, and that's how he got in.
Maybe they sent Lem Billings in and said to say he was Jack Kennedy. Lem Billings was a close
friend.
Hey, Lem,
pee in this cup, would you?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Lem, just say you're Jack and say I'm here for my physical. So Billings was now that's it's speculated that Billings was gay. Is that
true? He was.
No, it wasn't speculated. He was.
Yeah, he was
for sure. And so that's an interesting twist that he was really, I mean, Jack, other than maybe Dave Powers, one of his absolutely closest friends in life. Preceding even the Powers and the Irish Mafia, because he actually went, I think, to Choate with him and they attended Harvard together. So Billings and you know, that's just something that's a throwback when it was, you know, those homosexuals or gay people were accepted and probably in high society, but they were still not, they could never be open about it, you know, but it didn't mean, and I think Jack just didn't care. Of course, people have speculated that, you know, that he was secretly gay. And I mean, not that there's anything wrong with that, but I tend to doubt that. I think he was like very much a Casanova and just, I mean, the number of women he bedded down probably, I mean, yeah. And beautiful women too.
Been greatly exaggerated, by the way. I think many of the affairs that you've read about that Jack Kennedy supposedly had are probably not true.
Judith Exner's for sure. That's a real one.
He was certainly a man's man and a ladies' man. Men wanted to be him and women wanted to date him.
Right. That's true. Like James
Bond. Even though he was this, you know, sickly young man, you wouldn't think he'd be a babe magnet, but he was. I mean, he just had this personality, this intellect, this way about him that he might not have been classically handsome, but boy, the girls went for him. And he could charm, like even when he was in the hospital, the nurse would fall in love with him. He'd have five nurses gathered around his bed trying to take care of him and mother him. And, you know, he just had that charm.
I will say this. He, first of all, again, yeah, very charming, but also he had a very, very natural charisma that is unlike probably anybody, you know, we've heard that comes across even in pictures and, you know, 70-year-old films. I mean, you can just see this man stands out. You know, what his nickname was, or his like his sort of pet name, or well, not pet name, but like they'd razz him. The family members called him Rat Face.
You're right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I mean, that's, you know, so he was not viewed. I mean, he was, like you said, not traditionally a handsome guy, but he certainly he's funny because he almost defined what like beauty or like what, you know, good looking, like a handsome guy was. For almost from the time he lived onward, because before that it was more like, oh, you know, Cary Grant and you know, that sort of more sort of heavily, you know, masculine, suave, like Errol Flynn. And then after Jack Kennedy, it was more boyish looking, you know, with the sort of the youthful good looks. But Laurie, we're gonna get a quick news bulletin in here, and we'll return to this conversation, my conversation with Laurie Spencer, here on today's News Talk.
Big news, TNT Radio News.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. A leaked recording of German Air Force officials discussing sensitive military information has raised concerns over Russian intelligence potentially tracking Western missile deliveries to Ukraine. The Israel Defense Forces has stated that most of the Palestinian casualties during an incident near an aid convoy in Gaza were caused by a stampede rather than gunfire. A CBS News survey revealed that 46% of registered voters rated former President Donald Trump's presidency as excellent or good.
Well, my guest is one of my favorites because we both share a passion or a curiosity and a sort of a unquenchable thirst for information about the era of the Kennedys, the Kennedy family, and just the one of the most fascinating murder mysteries in many ways, or it has been. I mean, it has so many layers to it, and it's so complex and so endlessly fascinating, of course, is the tragic assassination of President Kennedy. And Laurie, you obviously weren't alive, right? But I mean, yeah. Obviously, you know, but neither was I. I mean, it was years after I was born, 8 years after he was assassinated, or just under 8 years. And I don't think it's hard to impress upon young people today, or people who didn't live or didn't grow up, at least in say the first 25 years after, how profound an impact this was and had on the country, the assassination of President Kennedy. Like the mourning was felt. I mourned. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't even alive. And when I discovered the magazines and all the, began to see the documentaries that started really kind of flooding the zone and say like the early 80s and Martin Sheen, you know, like that was about not just the straight, more obscure, assassination documentaries, which were difficult to come across. You had to, you literally, until videotapes were a thing, you would never see those because they weren't played in the mainstream. But I mean, it really, like every year, November 22nd, the nation remembered and went into a sort of a melancholy around that. And I dare say that since, unfortunately, like it feels like since 9/11 or since the turn of the millennium, turn of the century, that has been just consistently on the wane, and to where it's like, you know, on November 22nd, you're lucky if you hear anything. And unfortunately, what you probably hear is lone nut Lee Harvey Oswald assassinated the president. You know, it's sadly, which is completely a lie. What is your origin story?
Some of my first memories, like when I was 5 or 6, I found a copy of, you know, my folks, like a lot of families, save newspapers from certain historic dates in history. My folks were old enough to remember Pearl Harbor. They had the newspaper from December 7th, 1941, or December 8th, I think, and also had the newspapers from the day that President Kennedy was killed. And it was ironic because, Tyler, I grew up in a very conservative household. My folks were both Nixon Republicans. So it was kind of odd that they had the newspapers and the copy of Life magazine that came out right after President Kennedy was killed, because they didn't vote for him. They both voted for Nixon. They weren't big Kennedy fans. They didn't hate him, but they just didn't, you know, love him. They weren't Democrats. But that just goes to show you how deeply the loss and the sorrow was felt across our country, even from Republicans who didn't vote for Kennedy or didn't even like him. the assassination traumatized the nation. And I remember my father, who didn't agree with Kennedy at all politically, saying that, you know, telling me as a child how sad he was about the assassination. He felt like so much potential was lost. He said, you know, he was a great man and he was on his way to becoming a great president. But back then, even conservatives could appreciate Kennedy in some ways.
So what I noticed, Laurie, in these films of people in the streets of San Diego, Louisiana, of course, many Republicans, was that they would say something to the effect of, I didn't agree with his policies, but it's such a terrible thing to happen to such a fine man. And I think that he was viewed with respect and reflecting the best American values. I mean, how could you not? I mean, first of all, he defended liberty. His inaugural address, I don't care, is maybe the greatest oratory of all time in human history. I mean, not just American history. I mean, that, and I don't, I mean, I know Ted Sorensen.
Every American loved that speech, whether you're a Republican, Democrat, or somewhere
in the world. In the world, I mean, because it spoke to the world, you know, citizens of the world.
And people around the world love that speech. That's right. Yeah. Not just Americans.
And they love that America represented this, because even if they were impoverished or even living under tyranny, they saw that, I mean, it's sometimes just the fact, even if you're not able to access it, the fact that it exists, that there's a place where freedom is real and that it's, you know, human rights are, well, to the best as we could, you know, respect them. I think obviously the race issue and the civil rights struggles, you know, reflected the dark underbelly. But I don't think that was, I think, you know, again, those were anomalous in the sense that, you know, those were the people who hated and strayed from the American, you know, the American ideal, obviously, the racists. And, you know, working for Abraham Bolden, I mean, as I go through this case and I've been laying it out and just finalizing this letter, you know, this demand, it blows me away that these people did this. It's like, what kind of vicious, I mean, just not to simply, not to get too sidetracked, but I mean, for those who don't know, Abraham Bolden was the first African-American to serve on a presidential protection detail and the second Black Secret Service agent ever. And he was also someone who was not going to accept racial abuse and racist harassment and, frankly, the sorts of casual, whatever you want to say, just racial epithets and all this thing. You know, he was not one to just take that, you know, and say, oh yeah, like Uncle Tom, you know, whereas I think other agents were like, I'm just glad to be in the Secret Service. If these guys wanted, but Abraham Bolden was not one to do that. And he repeatedly reported this and tried to get them to bring that misconduct to an end. And
look what they did to him for that.
Right. Well,
they not only silenced him, they punished him and threw him in prison.
No, I mean, it's worse. I mean, because first of all,
ruined his life.
Yeah, he also, I mean, this misconduct, the racist misconduct, was just one slice of it. The fact that they were out carousing with women, getting drunk, drinking on the job. I mean, and I'm not talking like having a shot of this or a beer. I'm talking getting getting
until 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
and when they got to be up at 7 to protect the president with a hangover.
And he was prepared and had said to an agent before this went down. So it wasn't like, you know, James Rowley tried to say, well, if he had all these problems, he sure didn't say anything. It's like, and what, have you people hang him even earlier than you did? And when he did say something, look what happened to him. I mean, it's just convenient that this man who has a spotless record, absolutely spotless record of service, who was the first Black Pinkerton detective, who was one of the first Black detectives in the Illinois State Police and was chosen for the Secret Service. And his entire life has been nothing but a model of integrity and good character, that he just decided one day to solicit some random counterfeiter who he had arrested twice. I mean, you know, it's like the whole thing stinks. And with more than just like framing for a crime and sending him to prison, they destroyed his life. Entire life, his whole life was to be, you know, to be an officer of justice and to pursue law enforcement. And they just, and then the worst thing for someone who is in that position or that who has that desire in life is to be branded a criminal. It's like you are now to the world what you reviled and sought to quell. And it was just, it's so malicious and despicable that, and he's had to live with it up until literally just under 2 years ago when President Biden, which is the best thing greatest.
Probably the one good thing Joe Biden did.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. That's what I said. Yeah, I will praise him for what he did. That this is, I mean, in many ways made up for a lot of the vicious horror that he's inflicted on the African-American people of this country through his drug laws and through these racially disparate crime measures.
But Joe Biden's not racist. He has the most diverse cabinet in history, and he wants you to know it. He's got more black, trans, and female first such and such.
As hell, he's have a communist. He has a communist, subversive right in there as our Department of Homeland Security head, you know, Mayorkas. I mean, this guy. Yeah,
straight up.
Break.
Well, I'm not happy with Mayorkas because he's the guy who's been responsible for denying Robert Kennedy Jr. Secret Service protection.
That's right.
For 10 months now that our campaign has been pleading with the Department of Homeland Security and President Biden, by the way. I mean, a lot of people don't know this, how it's determined who gets Secret Service protection, who makes that decision. And it's a multi-layered process. There's actually a congressional committee that reviews a report made by the Secret Service. The Secret Service will assess the candidate's potential risk level, and then they take a report to Congress. That congressional committee meets on it, and then they make a recommendation, I think, to the Department of Homeland Security, who has the final say. But who really has the final say is the President of the United States. Joe Biden has the power at any time, for any reason, to grant Secret Service protection to anyone. He could literally give his dog trainer Secret Service protection.
And Laurie, we've got to take a little commercial break here for a couple of minutes, and you're spot on with that. And certainly, the fact that the president can't necessarily dictate to the Secret Service about his own protection, but he certainly can about other people.
Right.
And Biden has utterly failed, and it's despicable. But we're going to talk a little more about Bobby Kennedy's campaign with my guest, Laurie Spencer, on the other side of this break. Don't go away.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
Mark Morano was certainly a national treasure. At least he is, in my opinion. We're blessed to have him here on TNT. Anyway, he runs Climate Depot. And Climate Depot is a great place to go if you want to really take a look at some of the lunacy that's going on here. I warn you, it's probably going to get your blood pressure up. CNN came out with a blog, How EVs Became Such a Massive Disappointment. Now, one of my favorite movies is Casablanca, and I love the scene at the end where the police captain comes in and claims he's shocked that gambling is going on in this particular joint that was being run by Rick, right? AKA Humphrey Bogart. Well, remember the words, I'm shocked that this is going on. Well, when I look at this CNN headline, How EVs Became Such a Massive Disappointment, I'm shocked that this is happening. Who wants to buy a car unless you're going to putter around your house and it's like a glorified golf cart? I should say your neighborhood rather than the house. Who wants to buy that? Its battery is so heavy that it immediately puts excess pressure on the front of the car and your braking system. That's the first thing. Second thing, where are all the parts coming from? How are we making all these batteries? Just how are you going to put up with having to take 40 minutes to charge your car? What happens if you happen to live where it's cold? And believe it or not, despite global warming, much of the world is cold in their winter season. So I'm shocked that CNN has found out about all this. If you go to Climate Depot, you can read about it. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you've got.
Speaking on the issues that impact, Tyler Nixon on TNT.
I'm back with Laurie Spencer on the Tyler Nixon Show here on today's News Talk. We are lighting the fuse for freedom. Laurie, one of this network's, I think, favorite causes, or I'm not going to say pet causes, but I mean, everybody here, well, first of all, the network is based in Australia, and Julian Assange has definitely been someone that this network, everyone in it that I've that I've seen so far supports 100% as a legitimate and a noble journalist of the of really what represents what the profession should be, and the courage he's had and the lengths he's gone to stand for his principles and to not be not be cowed or intimidated or beaten back by these just, I mean, these people. I don't even want to get started. Think about like Hillary Clinton, the openly talking about assassinating him. Pompeo, I think.
Drone this guy?
Yeah, I know. Just like, yeah, okay, Hillary, why don't we just like lop your fat head off? You know, how about that? You know, how would you like us to talk that way? Oh my God, they'd be having, you know, fainting couches up the street, you know, a line of them just because you dared speak of the dragon ladies in such a you know, violent and crude manner. But she can just sit back and laugh, you know, well, we came, we saw, he died. You know, it's like, I mean, I'm sorry, but Muammar Gaddafi did not, I mean, he was a horrible dictator, but my God, I mean, that's not justice. That's just savage jungle, you know, brutality to sodomize the man. Like I mean, she's just a disgusting, wretched person. And yeah.
I think if I could jump in here, I think that,
Go ahead.
Okay. I think that it takes a certain kind of personality, shall we say, or mindset to even want to be the president of the United States, to seek that kind of power.
Yeah.
Which is
some would say it's called a psychopath.
Yeah. That's why the office tends to attract some psychopaths. Part of your job when you're president is to kill people.
Yes, that's true.
You literally order death every day.
Yeah.
An airstrike somewhere. You know,
you have to be certainly willing to send men to what could be certain death.
Right.
And you have to make some really tough decisions. And, I saw an interesting, it's a video out there. I don't remember. I probably should have saved it. It was something like the title. It might have been based on a book, or it was called something like In Defense of Psychopaths. And, you know, what it is that I think maybe unlike sociopaths, it's a little different sort of dysfunction in the sense that sociopaths, they have empathy, or they have empathy, they understand what they're doing, they can, you know, but they choose to do it anyway. That's almost worse than I think the psychopaths don't really have any feeling for anybody else. So it's almost like a reptile. You don't blame a reptile for being brutal. It's a reptile. And it's kind of a twisted way to think of another human being, right. But that's what they are. But at the same time, some of them are very, very effective at what they do. I mean, to the point of like changing, like being society changing or civilization changing people who are able to accomplish things that, frankly, you know, let more normally functioning people wouldn't. So I mean,
job could you have? Seriously, what other job could you have where you can legally kill people?
Yeah.
Well, you can just order an assassination like that.
If you're in the Secret Service in 1963, or maybe the Mafia. No, but in all seriousness,
maybe the mob.
Yeah,
it's not legal.
It's an interesting.
It's not legal. When you're the president, it's legal.
Well, some people think that Jack Kennedy was a sociopath. You know, he was very very ruthless about using people. I mean, he was. He used to say Bobby Kennedy had a feeling of, Bobby Kennedy felt for the poor people of the world. Jack never was like sitting around lamenting the plight of the poor. He used to just say, poor bastards. Like, I mean, he was pretty cold about that stuff, that doesn't mean that Jack didn't and maybe more so in a way, like didn't have that feeling for them or feel like necessarily any kind of empathy, but at the same time, he still worked for their best interests. I mean, it doesn't mean he didn't, want to see people lifted up. It's just that he didn't have that feeling like Bobby, I think, felt it, you know.
Well, you know, he didn't go as far as, say, Franklin Roosevelt or LBJ in the Great Society, but a lot of the Great Society some of those Great Society programs were started by Jack Kennedy. And
I don't think the Great Society did. I mean, I think it was the most harmful thing done to the impoverished in this country that we've ever seen.
Right.
It created the plantation that you know, the welfare where people have incentive not to work and to basically be on Uncle Sugar's dole the rest of their life. What did Lyndon say to the governor? I forget the governor. I mean, you know, it's some people say it's apocryphal, but he said, I'll have those, you know, what's voting Democratic for the next 200 years. And I mean, people might deny it, but it's totally consistent with Lyndon's, some of the statements he made. And I know you're a Lyndon guy, Laurie, but like, we got to be real about the guy. And just like, I think Jack Kennedy, maybe he wasn't a straight sociopath, but he definitely knew how to use people. And again, but these are in a leadership position. You have to do that. I mean, these are things, that's how you're an effective leader and you bring out the best in other people. So, I don't decry it as, but I mean, if you're just some like country club a-hole, of course it's reprehensible, or you're just some dictator in the workplace and a tyrant who just abuses people. Nobody has any tolerance for that. But in certain positions though, people who have those character traits, and I'm not diagnosing Jack Kennedy. I mean, like I said, I think he genuinely felt for his family. I think
the opposite of a sociopath, but I will say this is an interesting story. Before the war on poverty, as they called it, was started by LBJ, Jack Kennedy was deeply compassionate towards the poor. I think even though he never lived in that world and didn't know what it was like to be poor, he had an experience on the campaign trail in 1960 that profoundly changed him, is when he was campaigning in West Virginia. It was the first time in his life that he'd ever seen that kind of poverty, in Appalachia. And it stuck with him in the very first executive order that he signed, because he saw so much starvation and unemployment in West Virginia and in the South. First executive order on the very first day in office was to not only expand what we now call the food stamp program, but to also improve the nutritional quality of food, so that if you were poor, you didn't have to drink powdered milk. You could actually get whole milk at the store and the government would pay for it. He did step up aid programs to the hungry. That was so important to him. And just as on a closing thought there, at Jack Kennedy's final cabinet meeting, he was quite a doodler. In fact, there's a whole book of presidential doodles and a big chapter
Reagan,
on that.
Kennedy. Reagan, very similarly.
Yeah, he was quite the doodler. Right? And there's some pretty good doodles. But at his final cabinet meeting, he scribbled the word poverty on the page 7 times in capital letters and circled it. And it's revealing, because that's obviously what was on his mind, rather than, say, focusing on the 64 campaign or any of the other problems that he had to solve for himself. He seemed to be more focused on the plight of poor people. And
well, one thing I will say is and which probably speaks volumes to my respect for them, is I don't mythologize the Kennedys. I don't try to sugarcoat or cover over their, the dark side of them, or the ruthlessness, or any of their less noble traits. And I think one might say that Jack Kennedy was, paying off the people who got him, won him the West Virginia primary when he did those programs. Nice. It's certainly nice. I mean, the fact that it was oriented, and of course it's easy to be generous with the taxpayers' money, right? I mean, he wasn't exactly writing personal checks. So I'm sounding like I'm being,
in a way, I guess you could say he was, because he volunteered. All the years that he was in the House, in the Senate, and later in the White House, he never took a government salary. One of the few politicians who refused his government salary and, in fact, donated it to charities.
Well, that's definitely, that's nice. I mean, I think he knew he was running for president someday, and, he wanted that to be able to say that, but I think he didn't need the money.
He donated his entire presidential salary as well.
But how much of his personal wealth did he give away to charity?
I have no idea.
Yeah, no, because there wasn't any. Exactly. I mean, look, I'm Laurie. I know.
Although the Kennedys have many, many charities, as you well know.
No, for sure. Yeah. They're very philanthropic, and really in direct ways. They weren't just writing checks. They would get involved. I mean, especially on, Bobby's family. So no, I'm just, what I'm saying is I don't want to overly, I think they've suffered from being mythologized as Jack, as myself said, that more worse than the lie is the myth, that's more persistent and pervasive. And I think he would say, listen, evaluate me as I was, not as you, idolize me or lionize me. And that's, I think that's doing justice to history, but it's also putting him in the perspective as he was a human being and he wasn't perfect. by any stretch, but he was a great man. And that's, you know, something we can absolutely say. And I think his nephew, Robert Kennedy Jr., is maybe even a better man, frankly, in many ways, because of his, he didn't seek power. He's never sought power. And I think he would be great. My only problem is like, it's almost like he's too pure. It's like, you don't want to like expose this man to what our politics have become and what I dare say it's going to really take to clean the mountains of BS out of the barn and to, you know, the likes of these people who had no problem in that party, just dumping him right over the side in a heartbeat and going after him, no less, and sending his family members after him. But we've only got a few, maybe a half minute left, Laurie. Where do you see Bobby at the end of the day?
In the White House.
Okay, all right.
Are you kidding
me? Fair enough.
We're gonna win.
All right.
We're gonna win this thing.
Hey, listen, I appreciate an optimist.
In a perfect world,
I would say I could live with that, and I would appreciate that. Unfortunately,
it's going to be a wild election year.
Yes,
you never know what could happen.
That's
2024.
True. But I think whatever happens, that Bobby needs a place at the table, and I think Donald Trump would be a fool not to include him. But Joe Biden has been a fool, and denying him Secret Service protection